When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You know who else isn't going to quit? It's Ice Cube.
Hey.
We had the opportunity to talk to the hip-hop legend last night, and you're going to get the opportunity to hear what they won't hear on KSFM, and that's the conversation in its entirety. Ice Cube.
Yo, what's happening with you?
Oh, man.
What's good, Cube?
Good.
All good. How y'all feeling?
Man, we good, man. We appreciate your time. We had a discussion. I'd love for you to weigh in on. This wound up being like a 90-minute discussion on the show the other day. We were talking about the greatest entertainers in the history of hip-hop, and yeah, we were just creating like the best to ever do it. And I was making a pretty strong argument for Ice Cube, but like Ice Cube, LL, Ice-T, they was at the top of the list. And in terms of the complete catalog of hip hop and television and movies, man, what's that list look like for you?
I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm biased, but I think I've done more than anybody when it comes to, you know, movies for sure, you know, in writing and producing and directing and coming up with classics.
Yeah.
You know, I think, I don't know if anybody got me beat there. You know, I've done some pretty good things in music too. So, you know, I'm going to have to put myself at the top of that list.
Ain't nothing wrong with that. So Cube, I had you up near the top. The one that I couldn't figure out, and I couldn't figure out which one had a little more weight. You had the movies and the box office sales were crazy. But you look at Ice-T, and that man is on USA probably 70 times a day with that Law and Order. You know, people who have no idea what hip hop is, they know who he is from that. And I was just like, man, that network is crazy. But like you said, the movie catalog, I think that clearly goes to you.
I mean, without a doubt. I mean, like, I've actually written classic movies and produced them, movies that still quoted to this day. Not just one franchise, but several. And so I don't think you could beat that with a stick. and, you know, as far as sports, I think I got them beat, too, by having the big three.
Absolutely.
We call you a basketball Hall of Famer.
Huh?
When we introduce Ice Cube, we talk about Ice Cube, the NBA, the basketball Hall of Famer.
Yeah, you know, that's a major accomplishment that I never expected. You know, especially this early in my, you know, venture into sports. You know, it's been less than 10 years. And it's amazing. You know, I find myself in, you know, in these situations that I never even thought about, like Basketball Hall of Fame. And how could you equate that even to a rapper in any way, shape, or form? Right. So, yeah, I'm proud of my resume. I'll hold it up against anybody.
a little bit more on the basketball thing, man. You really changed the game because you had a vision for the 3-on-3, you know, for the Big Three League and the style of play, you know, that game of 3-on-3 half court. You had a vision for that. And now if you look at it, look, man, people are getting gold medals off of that. And that started with you. I remember when you started that, man, the Big Three and just the idea of competitive 3-on-3 half court basketball. Like I said, it's in the Olympics. And now you have the women with Unrivaled putting that league together, doing it as well, man. You really did change the game with that.
Yeah, we're proud of what we've done, you know, with the game of basketball, you know, especially the 3-on-3 format. To me, it's a better game to watch because, you know, guys play defense. You know, it's a real battle for the bucket. And I think that's missing in the 5-on-5 game, especially nowadays. You know, they're kind of hard to watch. So, you know, we got this style. And our game is a sprint. You know, we was the first one saying, you know, first to a set point win. You know, why do we have to run all these garbage minutes? Why do we have to run minutes at all? You know, first team that scored a points win. And so, you know, you got a game that's a full sprint where other games are kind of, you know, kind of clock managed. So everybody has a pace. And so I think it's just a more pleasing game to watch. We got cool little wrinkles like our 4-point shot, bring the fire, you know, and just being more innovative and doing something that the fans really dig, even trash talking. You know, why did we take that out of the game? We took a little bit of competitiveness out the game by, you know, eliminating trash talking and people being able to show their emotions during the course of the game. You know, so proud of what we've done.
At 41 years old, I'm definitely in the let me play in the Big Three League. I don't need to be in the NBA, man. I don't need to be running up and down the court, man. Put me in the half court and do that.
Everybody say that till they come to a game and check it out. You know, you don't want to be out there, man. Trust me.
Oh no, it's physical. It's physical, man. Them boys is playing. Yeah.
It's a hardcore game. You know, we call it the Big Three, not the Little Three. So dudes are really going at it, and we love it. You know, seeing 7-footers battle. You know, that's what the game is about.
Yeah, and at some point, Katino Mobley gonna lay your ass out. You just have to deal with it. Like,
you know, they know every trick in the book. You know what I'm saying? And they use it on each other. You know, it's fascinating to watch these dudes use all these little tricks of the trade to get a bucket. And you know, I'm very happy with the league, and we're going into our 8th year, and it's just getting better and better every year.
So with all that said, we just talked about your accolades in the world of sports, being a, you know, basketball Hall of Famer and the incredible stuff you did in cinema. But why make Man Down? Why go back to music after all of that?
I never left music. It's been something that I've been doing constantly, but I've been an independent artist for a long, long time. And so when you're independent, sometimes the focus ain't on the music because, you know, usually the big boys got all the algorithm, so to speak, you know, for lack of a better word. So
no, that's probably the perfect word.
Yeah, you know, but so if you really look, you know, I released Laugh Now, Cry Later in 06. I released Raw Footage in 08. I think 2010. Around 2010, 2012, I did I Am the West. Came back, we did the Mount Westmore project. That was cool.
Fire.
And then, you know, now it's time for a solo record. I love music. You know, I'm a B-boy at heart. So this is still my hobby. It's still fun. It's still something that I enjoy creating songs. And I don't know if I ever stop. It's no reason to stop. You know, it's no reason to move on. My day one fans really love this record. And that's who I did it for. You know, I didn't overthink it. I'm like, I'm going to do something that my day one's going to love. And everybody else got to get in where they fit in.
Yeah.
When starting to work on Man Down, is it one of those things where you're always ready so you don't have to get ready? Or, you know, you hear comedians sometimes when they're starting a special, they go to the little hole-in-the-wall clubs to work on their craft. Or if you're an athlete and you haven't played in a while, you work on, you know, getting back into the groove of things. Did you have to do that with the rhymes, or you just, it's just what you do?
Yeah, I'm always, you know, doing songs. You know what I mean? I'm always getting beats, writing lyrics, you know, hooks, you know, in the studio recording. You know what I mean? When I got something that's tight, I tuck it, keep going. Hmm. You know, when you look up and you got 10, 11 of them that's tight, you like, okay, it might be album time. So then you start working on music that's going to complete the sound of the album. But I'm always doing music. You know what I mean? To me, if you want to really be in this, you got to stay sharp. And the key is, to me, is I understand my audience. Mm. So I'm not reaching for other audiences. You know what I'm saying? I'm just hyper serving the people that like what I do. And, you know, that's sufficient enough for me, because artists, you know, sometimes you start reaching so much, and, you know, I'm not 25, so trying to do music like 25 year olds don't make sense to me. You know what I'm saying? Me, I do music, you know, West Coast, quintessential Ice Cube music is to me my path to success.
I love that, like, you've been in the game as long as you have, and you've never done a retirement album. It feels like everybody has done. This the last one. I think your boy Short has like 7 of them.
Hell yeah, you know, man, he got more retirement albums than he do regular albums.
But you just gonna keep making music until one day it's like, I'm done.
I might not never be done. You know, why should I stop?
Like, I'm with it.
It's not the sports game. You know, it's not like I'm gonna blow out a knee or tear my Achilles or, you know, anything like that. It's about, you know, being inspired by music, by situations, being able to put it together in a dope song form, rock the mic. You know what I'm saying? Try to be sharp with the lyrics. You know, it's too fun to retire. Like, what the hell are you gonna do? Go fishing? Like, what you gonna retire and do? Like right. What's better than rocking the mic? You know what I mean? Jumping on stage, doing, you know, songs that people did. You know, to me, it's like dream come true.
That sounds like your next movie with Kevin Hart, like a rapper that retires and goes fishing.
Yeah, go fishing with Kevin Hart. Use him as a bait.
Hey, Q, real quick, man. It's around Christmas time, so does anybody, I guess it's not really a DVD anymore, but on the streaming service, they pop in that Christmas classic Friday After Next, because that is a Christmas movie. That is one that you put on every Christmas holiday, man. Yeah. When's the last time you watched that one?
Probably a couple of Christmases ago. You know, I go back every now and then to check them out, or they'd be on TV, and you know, TV version is cool. Sometimes I'll catch it on cable. Sometimes they plan them back to back to back to back all weekend. So, yeah, and I check them out. You know, I still laugh at them. They're funny to me too.
Me too.
To me, what people love about Friday and the Friday movies is anybody and everybody can experience it. Like, we've all went through our own versions of that movie, you know, just hanging out with your crazy friend or your crazy cousin, and y'all just had one of them days where you was just laughing all day, and, you know, something memorable went down. And that's Friday. You know, it's a movie of just, you know, trying to hustle and survive, get through the neighborhood, you know, living just enough for the city type of life, and something crazy go down, and it's memorable. And so everybody done lived that over and over and over again, you know, so they can relate to the movie.
Cube, we appreciate you. I've said this to Casey. I've said this on the show many times. The first four albums you put out, counting Straight Outta Compton, I think is the greatest stretch of albums that have ever been put out in hip hop. So with the accolades for Friday and Basketball and the Big Three, those four albums, man, they're untouchable, man. So salute. You're a big part of the reason I love hip hop, man, and we appreciate you.
Thank you, man. I appreciate you guys. You know what I mean? Like, hip hop wouldn't be where it is without, you know, people like you guys, you know, curating it, pushing it out. You know what I mean? Dissecting it.
Hey, y'all, it's Chip Patterson from the Cover 3 Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. College football is about to enter its first ever 12-team playoff era, so join me, along with Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott, as we drop new episodes 5 times a week to close out the year. We've got reactions, bracket breakdowns, and best bets for these matchups with championship stakes. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Analyzing it, you know, I mean, giving your perspective, your history, your knowledge of the game to the people, you know, it's very important that people who know, you know, let the people, you know, coming behind y'all know what's up.
Yes, sir. And Cube, bring that Big Three back in the sack, man. You know what I'm saying? I haven't been in the sack in a couple summers, man. This summer, bring that Big Three to sack, baby.
And man, I keep you in mind for sure. We had fun. So I keep you in mind.
We appreciate you, man. Thank you, brother.
All right. Take it easy.
All right, Stu.
Oh, man, a legend.
Feel like Sean Cunningham. Man.
Hip-hop DX is Sean Cunningham.
Yeah, man, good stuff there from
man.
From Ice Cube. Very good stuff. Had a chance to meet him one time, thanks to Amy Trask, when the Big Three pulled up to Oracle.
Mm-hmm.
It is a tremendous live event.
I love like, for it.
It is
to
a
second.
Really, I haven't really been good yet. Live event.
I want to see it, man.
Yeah, they make it a lot of fun, man. So shout out Cube. Shout out Jason Jones if you're listening. I think you'd appreciate that. We'll come back. Well, from Ice Cube to Matt George. Why not? Matt George joins us next here on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320. Well, I don't know which one of you uncovered that, but apparently there's a fight happening at the Golden One Center tonight because of the jerseys.
Somebody getting socked up on the Lakers today.
Did someone get Matt, keep the camera fixated on Doug Christie the entire game. Just keep the camera zeroed in on the bench. Don't worry about cutting highlights and all that stuff later. You want the moment where Doug pops up from the bench and hits center court.
All I'm saying is the Kings have a Fox and the Lakers have a Christie. That's all I'm saying. Max Christie and De'Aaron Fox. That's all
Max Christie ain't bothered nobody.
Yeah, we got him getting...
Max Christie is going to be guarding De'Aaron Fox tonight. Max Christie has been Christie's been starting.
We got him getting less than 7.5. We got him getting socked up.
Wouldn't that mean De'Aaron's getting punched?
We flipped it.
We'll flip it.
Yeah, we'll flip it.
Okay.
The Kings,
because if Max Christie punches De'Aaron Fox, the Golden One Center might riot.
Right. What the radio audience does, we discovered during the break that the Kings will be wearing their classic Sacramento throwbacks, the purple joints, and the Lakers are wearing their yellow Laker jerseys tonight. It's the same color, jersey combination the night Doug Christie socked up Rick Fox.
Mm. In a preseason game, by the way. It was a preseason game.
And then they fought in the alley.
Wasn't it in Las Vegas?
No, it was in Staples.
It was a Staples Center.
Yeah, then they fought in the alley. That was some good stuff. That would help out.
Oh, Al Biaconi there trying to pull him apart.
Al was in the middle of the...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
If you look close enough, he's the little guy. He's the little guy getting thrown around. And then and didn't Jackie have the loaded sensational scary purse? Where she's swinging it, and Shaq in like a seersucker suit, like short suit, trying to pull everybody apart.
Yeah.
No, Shaq was getting involved.
Shaq was getting involved.
Well, he was like moving. He was like, move. He came like big dog or whatever.
No, he was in the tunnel. He was trying to get involved too.
Because the old Kings bench left.
That's right.
This was a preseason game.
That's right. It gets a shot of the Kings bench. Nobody there. Oh, that was great.
That was one of the all-time moments. Let's recreate it tonight.
Well, no, we're not advocating for that.
Hey.
It wouldn't hurt. But we're not advocating for it.
I think the Kings won that game. So.
Well, all right. Do what you got to do then. Do what you got to do. Matt, how doom and gloom for it is you following that loss after the loss to the Denver Nuggets on Monday?
I don't know if I was doom and gloom. A lot of people are calling it the worst loss of the season. Nah. I disagree because there was so much from that game to be positive about, although I was in no way calling it any kind of moral victory or anything like that. I think it was it stung, but it wasn't a doom and gloom reaction. It was just a reminder of, yeah, this team still is far away from where they need to be. And the fact that it was an annoyance in the sense that I'm the kind of person that if I put hard work into something and it doesn't work out or it doesn't go well, or if I work on something and then it's a rough draft and I have to go back and like re-edit it or rewrite it, it annoys the crap out of me. Right. I just don't like when things don't work out when I put the work in. So watching the Kings battle all the way back from 22 down and have an 8-point lead with 3 minutes to go for it to just be erased and all of that is nothing. It's just gone. That was frustrating. Then it made me think, like, how many times has this happened already this season? Like, the Kings had a 60-point game from De'Aaron Fox in a loss. The Kings had a monster triple-double from Domantas Sabonis against the Lakers game two of the season in a loss. The Kings battled back, forced overtime in Toronto. Domantas Sabonis also had a triple-double in that game in a loss. And then they have the Denver Nuggets comeback. It's just this Kings team, for whatever reason, has just not been able to take advantage of massive performances and big opportunities that's in front of them. And then you look at the fact that this team is 3-9 in games decided by 5 or fewer points. That's the reason why you look at the numbers, you look at the stats, you see the Kings are top half of the league in offense and defense. They have a positive plus minus or positive points differential, and yet they're 12th in the West. It's because all these close games that is supposed to be an area of strength for the Sacramento Kings, they are not able to close out games. And Mike Brown points more to the start of games and the first quarter and starting quarters as a reason for that. The reality is, too, the execution down the stretch has just not been good enough. And like, I think Fox made the right pass to Domas. Domas made the right drop off to a cutting DeMar DeRozan. And you don't want to harp on a mistake because it happens, but DeMar dropped the ball. You lost the game because DeMar dropped the ball on a cut that he just did successfully with a dunk the last possession going the other way. So it's just one of those things where these little things keep rearing their ugly head and biting the Kings, and the losses are adding up because of it.
In any way, are you encouraged? Wouldn't be the right word, but do you look at close losses and, you know, being able to fight back against, you know, better teams and good teams and things of that nature and say, you know, they're not that far away. They're not far away. Are you able to do that with some of these losses, or is it bottom line wins and losses were too late in the season for, you know, hope? We need to get new, you know, some different players in here or whatever. Like, do those close losses say anything to you in a positive way?
No, I want to try and find a way to say yes to that question, but no, the reality is the most important number, even if all the numbers show you're doing well in certain areas, the most important number is a win or a loss. And the Kings are losing basketball games more often than they're winning, and they're losing winnable games, frequently losing games on their home floor, frequently losing games because they're making the same damn mistakes every single night, frequently losing games because the head coach is coming to the podium after the game and saying they are losing because they don't have the attention to detail that they need, or they're taking plays off, or they're coming out of the gate slow, starting quarters slow, right? This team should 100% be better than what they are, but should doesn't really matter anymore. And we're getting to the point where I know there's still plenty of season left, guys, and the Kings could go on a 3 or 4 game win streak and suddenly be in 8th place in the West. Like, that's how close this mix is. So that is encouraging, except what is this Sacramento Kings team shown consistently that suggests that they're going to be able to do that? I think the Sacramento Kings will get a good win and then follow it up with a bad loss, because that's what they've been doing all season long. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what this team is shown to be. And until somebody on the floor decides it's going to be freaking different, it's not going to be different, because Mike Brown went back to his frequent timeouts. He called 2 timeouts in the first like 5 or 6 minutes of the game against Denver to get this team to refocus up. They still were down 20 at the end of the first quarter. He took a quick timeout early in the second quarter when the Kings got off to a sloppy start to start the second quarter. Thankfully, the team finally woke up because for some reason, this Kings team has to get into a mode of desperation or pissed off to decide to play hard. It doesn't make sense. So until this team decides, somebody on the floor, whether it's De'Aaron Fox or Domantas Sabonis or Jay Crowder or whoever the hell, until somebody on the floor decides to pull everybody together and go, we need to focus up and we need to hit these areas hard. We need to not take plays off. Until someone on the floor decides to do that, nothing's going to be different. And this is why I don't blame Mike Brown. I see everybody in the comment section jumping on Mike Brown. And yes, Mike Brown has made mistakes. Absolutely. He's had questionable decisions with his rotation. And Mike will also be the first guy to tell you that clip that went viral earlier this week or went viral yesterday of Mike kind of calling out De'Aaron Fox or talking about De'Aaron Fox. A part of that clip that nobody talks about is Mike also goes, it's on me too. Like he goes, it starts with me, but Fox has to be that on the floor too. So Mike is taking responsibility for what he can take responsibility for. But what more can a head coach do than tell you we need to box out? We need to crash the glass. We need to give 110% in this area. And if his players aren't doing it and he's using three timeouts in the first 15 minutes of the game to try and refocus them and they're still not doing it, how can we blame the coach and the coaching staff for that? And I'm sorry, if you need the head coach to fire you up in a pregame speech to get you to be ready to play, you're not a good basketball team. You're not. So the Sacramento Kings, whether it's De'Aaron Fox or whoever on the floor, need to decide they're going to be different. And they haven't shown that at any point this season consistently enough for me to believe that they're going to be able to turn this season around. That's the way this team is at.
You said that's who the team has shown to be this year. Like kind of win games, lose one. Isn't that who they've shown to be for the last like year and some change now? Because they did this last year, right?
It's kind of who they've shown. And this is not fair, but because he's the longest tenured king, it's what we have to look at. We've been having this conversation about on-court leadership since De'Aaron Fox came into the league. And I know De'Aaron is not the leader that is going to pull you aside like Draymond Green does. And Draymond Green is a name that frequently gets brought up by Mike Brown. Now, I'm not saying Mike is saying De'Aaron Fox has to be like Draymond Green. Mike Brown has also used a story or told a story a couple of times about LeBron James when he had young LeBron in Cleveland, how LeBron would hold guys accountable when things weren't going right. LeBron would pull everybody together and go, you do this, you do this. We're refocusing on the team we are and what we've been working on. Fox may not be that guy. But what Mike said yesterday that I thought was so powerful is Fox can't be the guy when things are not going well or when they're not executing or they're not doing the little things that they need to be doing. Fox can't be the guy that go along with that. If Fox is a leader by example, which is what we believe De'Aaron Fox to be, if he's a leader by example, then if he's not setting the example of boxing out and crashing the glass and giving 110%, then there's no chance in hell the team's going to if he's not willing to do that. Now, I think De'Aaron, more often than not, has put in the effort this season. De'Aaron has been sensational defensively this season, I feel. So I feel he is trying to lead by example on the defensive end of the floor. But when you look at a game where the Kings are missing Keegan Murray against a bad Denver Nuggets team, and they're down by 20 points in the first quarter, they're coming out flat. You look at the scoreboard and you see 4 points for De'Aaron Fox. I don't think that's a coincidence. And it's not De'Aaron Fox's fault. But Mike calling this out and Mike pointing this out is 100% correct. Because De'Aaron, if he's going to be the superstar that he wants to be, he wants to be paid like, and he's certainly trying to be with his buddies at Clutch Sports when he's going on Draymond Green's podcast and saying, and I have no problem with him saying the organization needs to kind of prove to me that we're going to be a winning organization for me to re-sign. I have no issue with him saying that at all, except he's largely responsible for the organization getting there. He can control that right now. So if Fox wants to be a leader by example, then lead by example. Box out, crash the glass, play hard. That way, when somebody clearly isn't stepping up and playing to that level, everybody in the arena can see it, and Mike Brown will know who to take out and who to replace.
Let me ask both you guys a question that I didn't even really think about till right now. Did Mike Brown need to say that to us?
I thought it was refreshing.
But if he's so, having that conversation with De'Aaron, we have a job to. This has helped for 2 days. Mm-hmm. You know, it has absolutely
it's been fantastic.
Yeah, it's been great for our job. But I'm of the belief, it don't matter if he say that. He don't need to say that to the public or to the media.
He needs
to have that conversation with De'Aaron.
Do you think he has?
I think he has, and that's where.
But you
can make the argument. That's where it needs to end.
But how many? Go ahead, Matt.
I'll just say this though, because this is important. Luke Louts called De'Aaron Fox out earlier this season. He didn't do it publicly because he's an assistant coach. But De'Aaron was the one that told us Luke Louts challenged him. And Mike Brown also told us Luke Louts challenged Fox. You know how Fox responded to that challenge? Scored 109 points in the next 2 games. The 2 games after he got called out, he scored 60 and then 49. And Luke Louts' challenge to him was get to the paint, touch the paint, attack, and De'Aaron went off and responded to it. So I have no issue at all with Mike Brown doing this.
But that's two different things, though, Matt. Luke Louts talked to De'Aaron Fox. Luke Louts didn't talk. He's an assistant coach. I get it. But he didn't say all this to the media. He talked to De'Aaron Fox. I think Mike Brown did talk. I think he said everything that he said to us, to the public, to De'Aaron Fox. And I don't have a problem with him necessarily saying it. I'm just kind of asking the question, did he need to do that? Did he need to say that there?
He's done that for like 6 or 7 other players on this roster. Why wouldn't he do it for De'Aaron Fox, who he says and everybody else says he coaches Fox and Sabonis harder than anybody else on that team? So if he's going to say what he said about Keon Ellis publicly or Kevin Huerter publicly or insert player here publicly, then yeah, he should be able to say that about De'Aaron Fox, especially when it's 100% true. And it's not the first time he said something like that publicly about Fox. He said at the end of the year that the Kings made the playoffs after they got eliminated, he said in a press conference that year that De'Aaron Fox is on the cusp of being a superstar. He just has to bring it every single night. It's kind of the same message that he sent this year. Mike has said this before. It's nothing new. And I also don't think it would bother Fox, or it bothers Fox that it's being said.
Do you think Mike shouldn't have?
I wouldn't say he shouldn't have. I just don't think it was necessary. Like, unless Matt George said, hey, what do you think about De'Aaron Fox's leadership right now? Then you're asking a direct question. The way we saw it, it seems like he kind of just said it. Matt, you were there, so I think
I actually wasn't. Okay. I wasn't there.
So I don't know. I still don't know if it was like in response to a direct question about De'Aaron Fox, but it comes off on as he's like, I'm gonna say this regardless. Like, Mike, what'd you have for breakfast? Well, let me tell you this. De'Aaron Fox needs to be better.
I think it was an answer to a question involving like the slow starts in that first quarter. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that was, and he's 100% right, because again, the eye test will show you and the numbers will show you. Kings got off to a slow start. So did De'Aaron Fox. And De'Aaron needs to set the tone. They've also said publicly, Malik Monk and Mike Brown have said publicly that like Mike challenged Fox like 2 weeks ago to play pissed off more or get to that mode more. And we kind of took it as, ha ha, it's kind of funny, except this is what we've been talking about Fox for like 4 or 5 years. Pissed off De'Aaron Fox is cool. It's fun. When De'Aaron Fox is pissed off, oh, he's unstoppable. It's great. Don't piss off De'Aaron Fox. It's fun for us to say that, except why does it take a superstar, or who's supposed to be your superstar, why does it take Dylan Brooks chirping at him to get him there? Why can't he get himself there? Again, I don't have any problem with Mike pointing that out, and he has before.
Once again, I guess my biggest thing is I don't have a problem with them saying it, but I am of the belief that I don't need to tell everybody family business. I just need to tell you, De'Aaron. So if like it to me, it doesn't. I loved hearing it. We saw the reaction yesterday when I first heard it. I loved what he was saying. Everything he was saying was right, but it's not getting extra points because he told the media. Like, the only thing that matters is that he talked to De'Aaron Fox, and if he talked to De'Aaron Fox, that's it. He don't need to tell us anything. He doesn't need to say that to us or anything. And I'm not saying he's wrong for it. I'm just saying, like, I just asked the question. Did he need to tell us that? Did he need to say that to all of us in that setting? I'm just asking the question. I say no.
I don't think he needed to. I also don't think Mike needs to say anything. I think Mike's personality, Mike is a naturally, and trust me when I say this, Mike is a naturally transparent coach. Mike shares things and walks us through things publicly and privately that most coaches would not do. And that is a blessing when you're covering it. It's a blessing to have those conversations with somebody. How many times have we seen those clips from practice of someone will ask a question about something schematically, and Mike starts grabbing media members and putting them in different places to walk them through verbatim what he's trying to do and what the Kings are trying to do. Like, this is the kind of coach that Mike is. If it's on his mind and he thinks it's important, Mike is going to share it. And I don't, and I think De'Aaron Fox understands there's not a, he's not calling Fox out. He's not singling Fox out as Fox was the problem. Fox is the reason why we lost. Mike is just speaking his mind about what needs to happen for this team to get to where they're trying to be. And he's talked about a lot of different things. I think talking about Fox's element of it is an important thing to do. Plus, De'Aaron Fox has said before and after Mike Brown was hired that he wants to be coached this way. Maybe not necessarily the way that Mike has said things to the media, but De'Aaron has wanted to be coached hard. And he never really was until Mike got here. And we've seen how it's changed De'Aaron for the better, especially on the defensive end of the ball. So there's no reason to believe that there's any issue, in my opinion, there's no reason to believe there's any issue with Mike saying what he said. And it, for some, in any way, kind of betraying the trust of Fox or putting Fox in a negative light, because I don't think that was the point. And anybody who kind of listens to it or watches it, I think, understands that.
I agree.
So with all of that said, and I realize what Mike said yesterday is a big catalyst to all of this, but Matt, this team is a game below 500. They clawed their way back to 500 before losing that game on Monday. I think we all believe they're playing below expectations, our expectations, their own expectations. But is De'Aaron really the first person we need to look at as the an issue?
Oh, no. No, but the problem is there's not one issue. There's a multitude of issues. And this Kings team loses games or has bad nights in so many different ways, right? I think the first thing we need to look at is not on the court. The first thing we need to look at is the front office. And I've been a big fan and big supporter and big believer in Monty McNair and for the most part have liked the moves that he's made. But Monty McNair, I think, has done a terrible job of putting this roster together that complements the coach and addresses what this team needs. And I allowed myself to have kind of the wool pulled over my eyes a little bit with the DeMar DeRozan signing, which I still stand by was a great signing. DeMar DeRozan to Sacramento was a really, really good move. But the fact that De'Aaron Fox is also going on Draymond Green's podcast, and this was refreshing for Fox to say, by the way. Fox said, yeah, Mike Brown's losing whatever hair he has left because we're not playing defense and it's personnel based because we're too small. I'm glad Fox is saying it because we're all saying it and we're all seeing the same thing. Mm-hmm. So the first person I'm looking at, if there's anybody's seat that's hot, it damn sure shouldn't be Mike Brown. I don't think it should be anybody. I don't think anybody's seat should be hot at this point. But Monty McNair in that front office better be feeling the pressure because magically their defensive issues of being too small, struggling with physicality and not being able to defend the three, magically they didn't go away because you added a 20-point per game scorer in DeMar DeRozan. So there's a multitude of issues, but I do think that because we've had this conversation before in the media area during Kings games, looking around going, where is the 60-point version of Fox? And it's not necessarily the number, but it's the aggressiveness. When Fox is that way and he chooses to be that way, he's unstoppable. There's nothing you can do. So when he's not that, it's easy to see and easy to question, where is that? Why is that? And I understand it's difficult, and Mike has shared, it's difficult to play that way for 82 games, especially with how hard Fox is playing on the defensive end. It's difficult to play that way, 100%. But again, as the superstar, as the guy that's now publicly twice said, the organization needs to do this for me to resign, it's right to point out and focus on when you're not always holding up your end of the bargain. More often than not, Fox does, and he's a star, and he's not the problem with this team. But when the Kings are struggling, and the Kings need to win games, especially at home, and they've had this consistent problem of starting games slow or not having the right energy at home, and you look at your star point guard, and he's part of the issue, or at least he's not being what you need on that given night, it's going to be talked about more than Keon Ellis or Kevin Huerter or rotational player A, B, C.
That was actually probably the one part about that interview and any of Fox's responses that I wasn't a fan of. Because we can debate whether he was right or wrong, but that's, hey man, like, stop looking for somebody on a white horse to come save you guys. This is who you are. This is what it is. And because you're a little shorter than team B or whatever, that gives you no excuse to get lit up and give up 25 three-pointers and not defend. It's a gateway to an excuse. And I'm not saying Fox was making an excuse. I'm saying that's a gateway to an excuse. It should, like, you can realize what's going on. Like, hey, we're small or whatever the case may be, but it's unacceptable. Some of the things that we're doing on defense, and we need to improve. We can't wait for somebody to come in and save us. And I think that's one of the messages that maybe Mike Brown was trying to get across as well in his response. And that's one of the things I think about when everybody, and I'm not saying anybody's wrong, but just saying, like, when they talk about all they need, this and that, man, stop, handle business before you wait for somebody to come around and come save you. Like, my thing for the last 2 days has been, this team, regardless of what they need, should be better than what they are right now. And that, I think that should be their focus. How do who we have in this locker room fix what we have and stop waiting for Monty or somebody else to come do something with this roster? Because it may never come. Then what happens?
Casey, Mike Brown would agree 110% with what you said. That's the thing. Now, I think Mike also has made it clear through his actions that he wants more and he needs more for the way he wants to play. And I think he's made it clear through his words saying defense, 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 and Monty's words saying offense, 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 that there's a disconnect with this roster construction. That being said, Mike is not looking at this roster and going, oh, this is the best we can be defensively. No. Like, I firmly believe Mike would push this team and hold this team to an accountability level on defense that's a higher bar and higher expectation than who they are as a players and who they are as a roster, and lose his job because of it, rather than just go, all right, this is what we are. Let's just try and score 135 points a night. Like, that, what you said is how Mike feels and what he believes, and he's said that to us publicly. So you're 100% right. This team cannot wait for someone to come in and save them. They absolutely should be better than how they are playing. That being said, this roster is a flawed roster. This roster has issues. And Monty damn sure can't sit on his hands again during the trade deadline. And that sounds harsh to say, because I'm sure he tried to make plenty of phone calls last season and nothing went through. But the reality is, this is a results league. Monty can't stay quiet and go through another quiet trade deadline and then turn to this roster and go, well, we should just be scoring more. Because clearly that's not the only problem with this team.
It was a good shift of strategy on Monty's part. So who's the answer? Like, that's, I think, what Kings fans are debating and discussing and trade machining and Twittering. And, like, who is it? Who makes the team better in your eyes?
I mean, I think any one of Cam Johnson or Dorian Finney-Smith helps address this team. What the Kings do not need, I feel, is they don't need a big swing. They don't need another Tyrese Halliburton, Domantas Sabonis move. They don't. However, if there's hesitation for Monty McNair, I understand this hesitation. Monty is all about flexibility, right? And Monty has been very consistent with his actions and his words as to who he is. He's told us who he is from the very beginning, and he stayed true to it. When Monty felt like he's had to make a move, he's made a move, to his credit. Went out and got DeRozan, the Domantas Sabonis, Tyrese Halliburton trade. So he's not afraid to pull the trigger on something big if it's there. That being said, this team, the way I understand his hesitation could be, if you make a move for a Cam Johnson, and from what I understand, it's like Brooklyn wants a couple of firsts. In my opinion, give the couple firsts and bring him in. If that's who Mike Brown wants, if that's who the team wants, if that's who you really believe can help this team address their issues, because like we talked about earlier, Casey, they are close. If that's how you feel, then pay the price. But if you do that, let's say you go out and you go get Cam Johnson and Dorian Finney-Smith and it costs you 2 first-round picks. Okay, now the idea of a Karl Anthony Towns and multiple pick, I'm not saying Cat specifically, but that New York Knicks, Minnesota Timberwolves trade with multiple first round picks being involved or anything, that's off the table now. Mm-hmm. Now you've lost your flexibility to make a massive, massive swing. But at this point, I don't think you need to make a massive swing anymore. So Cam Johnson is there. Cam Johnson, I don't think, fixes the Sacramento Kings, but he addresses it and makes them a lot better. So if he's there and it costs you 2 second or first round picks plus matching salary, which would be like Herter and Lyles, if that's what it takes, if you really truly believe, if the organization really truly believes that Cam Johnson can't address what this team needs, then go out and do it. I would rather live with it not working than the Kings not doing it and watching the Warriors or another team in the West do it and then go on another big run and knock you out because you were too afraid to pull the trigger. That's where I feel we're at. Plus, there's always a name out there that we don't even talk about that becomes available between now and the trade deadline.
Yeah. How are you feeling about this team tonight, you know, specifically? Do you think they have enough to bounce back, get a win, maybe a couple wins, maybe a few wins over the next week or so? Like, how do you feel about them? Because I talked to, you know, Damian about it earlier, and Monday, that was a tough one. That was a punch in the gut. But they won 4 of 6, I think was the number at that point. Or would have been 4 or 5 if they.
No, they'd won. They were 4-1 over the last 5 before they lost that game.
So they had won 4 of 6, and they're playing better. Not where everybody thinks they are, but as of late, they have been playing better. Do you think that still can be the case, or you know, was Monday just too much of a microcosm of this team?
There are two traits about this team that I trust wholeheartedly. The first trait is that they're never out of a basketball game. It feels like they're never out of it. No, truly.
No, it's true, but we don't need to exercise this every freaking game.
I understand. 100%. You're 100% right. 100%. The way that I said on the podcast was they're never out, but it always feels like they're down. And that can't happen.
It. Yeah.
So there's that element that I trust. And the other thing that I trust is, and this has been consistent through the Mike Brown era here in Sacramento, the Kings tend to follow up bad losses with good performances. It tends to wake them up. Not always, but more often than not, we've seen the Kings respond to a bad loss or a bad performance with something good. And the fact that they've had multiple days to work this, we've had public comments from Mike Brown and De'Aaron Fox, and De'Aaron Fox has been challenged. I do expect a better version. I expect a win tonight for the Sacramento Kings. I'll be completely honest with you. I expect a win. I was breaking this game down with the Locked On Lakers guys, the Kamenetsky brothers. And one thing they pointed out to me that was really encouraging is that plays right into the Kings' hands is the Lakers are doing two things terribly right now. They're terrible at guarding transition, and they're terrible at taking care of the basketball. The one thing the Kings have done really well over the last month is turn their opponents over. So if the Kings can play right into that and turn the Lakers over and get out in transition, I think they have a really, really good chance to win this game. What I want to see the Kings avoid is get rid of those 5-minute stretches at the beginning of quarters or beginning of halves or whenever. Get rid of that 5-minute. I know basketball is a game of runs, but get rid of that 5-minute stretch where you just fall apart or stop executing. If something's working, do it from start to finish of this game. Don't get bored of it. And that's been an issue with this team.
But I think they would put together a complete game, man. I think we're all looking for that.
And catch that, Matt. Game. Matt throws in. I think they win. Can just hold LeBron to 18 straight points instead of 97 he scored.
You win. Yeah.
Hey, Matt, did you know LeBron played his first game in Sacramento?
I did not, actually. Even if I was there, I did not
big time.
Know that.
Yeah, that's big time.
Did you? Apparently, there was a question asked by our boy Tone at Shoot Around today. Tone asked LeBron if he remembers the first autograph he signed in Sacramento, because apparently there's a fan coming to the game tonight, and she claims to have the first autograph ever signed by LeBron. So Tone asked this question to LeBron, and I guess asked multiple follow-ups.
What did LeBron say?
LeBron probably said something online. Yeah. I don't remember. I wasn't there, but from what I heard,
LeBron probably said, huh? Well, it's on the internet. We'll watch it.
Apparently, Tone was like, we got to link you guys up. Maybe it's true.
Oh, Tone. Well,
Tony.
What a moment. What a moment.
Just as long as you don't stand in front of my damn camera.
Oh, I don't know how that wasn't the top moment in the first 1,000 episodes of D.
That was an all-timer. That was
just Tone standing up and turning around right in Matt George's shot. I can't remember. Did that? You had to air that. Did you air that?
Yes, I had to. I know because it was Mike Brown and Rosé taking over Domas.
That's right. That's right.
The sound bites were so good. I was like, I have to use it. Yep. But Tone stood up. That was the same night that I gave you a tour of the Chase Center because they wouldn't stop playing loud music. That was a terrible night.
That was a great night.
That was an all-time night.
That is iconic. Absolutely iconic. Man, I'm hoping to hear a couple of Young Zell songs tomorrow, man.
Man, me too, man. We need that. Yes, we
indeed.
Need that.
Yes, indeed. Thanks to Matt George, as always, his great work over at ABC 10, Locked on Kings podcast. Make sure you're following everything our man Matt George does. And we've got the Kings and the Lakers tonight. We will be back to cover it all tomorrow morning beginning at 10 a.m. We're going to head over to 102.5. You want more sports content? We got Thursday Night Football on the way. Chargers and Broncos coming up next here on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320.
Vamos Kings, light the beam.